This episode of the Walk On Mentality podcast is brought to you by Goodwill Provisions. Are you ready to take your health and wellness journey to the next level? If so, look no further than Goodwill Provisions, your partner in holistic, athletic nutrition. Goodwill believes that true well-being encompasses more than just physical fitness. It's about nurturing your mind, body, and soul to achieve peak human performance. Their provisions range from the mushroom-powered Dawn Patrol superfoods, which go perfect in your morning coffee or post-workout smoothie, to whey protein, creatine, and even CoQ10 to help you stay focused and energized throughout the day. As part of the Walk On Mentality community, you get an exclusive perk. Head over to goodwillprovisions.com to explore their offerings and treat yourself to a healthier journey. Use code MENTALITY at checkout and you'll unlock a fantastic 15% off your order. Thanks for supporting the podcast, and I can't wait to hear what you think about the supplements. Remember, no limits. If you're like me, you like to train hard. And if you train hard, it's incredibly important that you take the time to prioritize rest and recovery so that you can come back better. And one of the ways I set myself up to come back better is by rocking the Kane Revive. The Kane Revive is designed to stimulate recovery from the ground up, created for moments of athletic transition, made to support and renew the feet before and after workouts. Kane is made with Bounce Back Foam, a breakthrough biofoam created from sustainable Brazilian sugar cane. The shoes are odor and bacteria resistant, quick drying, and ultra durable. They were developed in partnership with Dr. Daniel Geller, an authority in the treatment of foot and ankle injuries in elite runners, cyclists, and triathletes. Head to the link in the show notes to support the Walk On Mentality podcast and get yourself a pair. Come back better. Are you tired of feeling like your clothes are too tight, uncomfortable, or never your size? What about feeling like you never have the right apparel for the various occasions that you're doing on a month-to-month basis? At the end of the day, you look good, you feel good, and you feel good, you play good. And that's in every area of your life. And if that resonates with you, look no further. I'd like to introduce you to the Roan Commuter Collection. Roan's Commuter Collection is flexible and breathable. There's a product for every occasion. Mobility is everything, and it makes looking good easy. Not to mention, with Gold Fusion anti-odor technology, you never have to worry about your pits reeking. If any of that resonated with you, then my friend, you are in the right place. The Commuter Collection can get you through any workday and straight into whatever comes next. So head to roan.com/mentality and use promo code MENTALITY to save 20% off your entire order. That's 20% off your entire order when you head to rhone.com/mentality and use code MENTALITY. It's time to find your office comfort. Marlon Smith, I appreciate you joining me today, bro.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. How's your day been so far?
It's been good. Woke up with a little run with some awesome guys this morning and got into the Word. So feeling good, cranking away.
What got into the Word, if you had one thing that stuck out to you most from this morning, what was it?
Just the difference between the routine that you create and kind of leading with the heart and, you know, from a more spiritual sense. It's two very different things, but they coincide with one another.
Yeah, and I think somebody in the group alluded to how that's kind of across a lot of different areas of life, right? Like the difference between having a routine and having the intention behind what it is that we're doing. Do you feel like that has reared its head in other areas of your life besides just faith?
Yeah, most definitely. So, like, routine is everything, you know, in my life. But, like, for my personal experience is that if you kind of let that kind of seep in too deeply, you can lose connection with the reason why you're doing it. So, like, as an athlete, I was used to doing all these different things. Became second nature. And then I got to a point where I had, like, a high-performance type of mindset where if it wasn't producing this or that, I wasn't happy. Which obviously isn't very healthy. But definitely, you know, the routine and habits is definitely a big part of my life.
Yeah, and I was reading on the All In Fit website this morning, just your bio was talking about how at some point in your athletic career you beat up your back, and that's really what kind of took you away from the game. Mm-hmm. But you noticed exactly that point, which is that the same kind of habits and routines and things that you did as an athlete were things that you felt like could help you in business and other areas of life, and ultimately that's why you've kind of gone the direction that you have in your entrepreneurial journey. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, when I was transitioning from the, you know, being an athlete to what we call a business athlete, there's a lot of, there's some crossover for sure. And I think that, you know, the challenge with athletes when they transition, whether it's collegiately or professionally, is you lose a big part of your identity. But the habits and the lessons and the routines and the regimen, all that type of stuff, you could still take with you. And so I had to figure out over time, you know, how to extract that part of it and taking it into what I do now. Mm-hmm. And not really defining that as like just an athletic or sports thing. It's transferable.
Yeah. How do you think you were able to disconnect the two? Because I know from my perspective, like, man, I had a hard time when I got done playing, figuring out how to channel the energy and the routines and life outside of sports. And I feel like it really wasn't until like the last couple years of my life that I really developed a more like healthy relationship with the routines and the training and the discipline and the regimens that served me so well as an athlete and do serve me in my life outside of sports as well. But I feel like it took me a while to get to a really like healthy balance. So what was your, like, how did you actually navigate doing that? And was it challenging?
Very challenging. I mean, it's still a challenge today. I think for me, I got therapy. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. And the availability of resources. Like, I've seen some companies, I can't forget the guy's name, but it was basically a nonprofit for veterans and athletes when they're transitioning from that brotherhood.
Here, Austin based?
Yeah, it was, I was watching, I forgot the guy's name.
Nate Boyer?
Sounds familiar. It was a guy that runs, and he was jogging with his Navy SEAL.
Okay.
Former Navy SEAL guy, and like he's a part of this organization.
Okay.
I forget what it's called, but there's not a lot of resources like that. They're just now starting to come out with things that can help that athlete transition, because it's a big part of your identity, at mm-hmm. least you think it is. So what I had to figure out was, okay, why do I have this high performance type of mindset? What are some things that I'm ignoring? And then once I started figuring that out through therapy and through observation, like, you know, catching myself, mm-hmm. You know, in certain aspects, I started to find more happiness, you know, in the work that I did. It's almost like it became more meaningful.
Yeah.
Extracting those routines and everything from being an athlete. So therapy definitely is key. And then the second thing I would say is, like, how could we replicate that model on other platforms? So like the group today, like that's a form of the locker room, the team camaraderie.
Right.
Getting together with some guys, getting in the word, you know, getting together with people where you're struggling or working hard towards something.
Yeah.
And that creates that for me.
What do you think, you know, this high performance mindset you talk about? So what do you think fostered that mindset within you? I mean, obviously, I think we'll probably go into this next, but, mm-hmm. you know, talking about your athletic career and things that you've experienced, like, what do you think ultimately pushed you to have kind of this, like, high-performance mindset? And I'll just shut up now, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's man, it's striking a chord with me because I'm still navigating with it. Mm-hmm. So even though I've, like, had moments of realization, I'm still haven't arrived to the point I want to be at. The best way I can say it is that I was always, like, from a young age, and a lot of this has to do with kind of my father and I too. Just, you know, my parents had me very young. They did a really good job, an exceptional job. All of us are, you know, doing well and things like that. Me and my three siblings, but they were young, and so my dad and I kind of, you know, bumped heads a lot growing up. I was misunderstood, he was misunderstood, and so, you know, there was a lot that I did for the approval of someone else. Mm. So my dad being one of them, and then that coupled with, like, just, you know, regular, normal kid growing up stuff, people making fun of you because you look different, you're taller, or you're short, or you got big feet, or whatever mm-hmm. else it is. And then for me, just being an athlete, everything I did was kind of discredited. Like, I thank God for it. I don't regret anything because it made me work hard. I'm still would consider myself a hard worker today. But it was all coming from not a place of love. It was coming from a place of approval. So I ended up being that guy that would be the strongest in the weight room or be, you know, first in the conditioning sprints or pushing people or doing things that were more or exceeding the position that I was in. Prime example, basketball. Mm-hmm. Played a basketball player my whole life. And, you know, when you're in high school, you're 6'6", they expect you to be down in the post, right? Yeah. So my coach would call me Houdini because I would do a lot of other stuff. Like, I always felt like if I could dribble the ball really well, if I can shoot the three, then now it's more than just, oh, you're just scoring because you're big and tall, mm-hmm. right? So that's where it came from. Like, mainly it's just really just trying to approval. So I didn't really know why I was doing it up until recently.
Yeah, so it was almost like you were proving that you didn't have to fit in this like pigeonhole of like, oh, just because I'm tall, I have to play in the post. And then that probably manifested into other areas of your life where you were just trying to prove that you didn't have to do something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, and eventually that way of thinking caused an implosion.
Yeah.
It was not sustainable. We'll probably get into that, but you know, it'll put me in a place of isolation, mm-hmm. outside of what I did. You know, once I left from football or basketball practice, like I said, like I've at the very beginning when we started talking identity, I had an identity challenge for football, but like it, I was never. Now I'm in a place where I feel like I'm Marlon no matter what I'm doing. Mm. If I'm in a weight room, if I'm in business, if I'm trying to close a deal, like, I'm Marlon. I don't have to be these two, three different things. And that's kind of how I felt up until, like, therapy.
And would you say you went from operating from a place of I need approval to just operating out of, like, love, like, almost like self-love and your own approval for yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was actually, like, the foundation of the therapy that I got. Was it's very different when you're doing things from love. Like if my father, for instance, if it wasn't like I had if I had a game and I didn't do too well, you know, I missed layups or whatever may happen, and then after it was like, come on, how are you gonna miss that? Like, you know, come on, like, you know, do better, whatever. Okay, cool. So I probably should have made that layup. But if it's like I know when I'm out there that like my dad's gonna love me no matter what, I can still perform at a high level. I can still, you know, I can make those mistakes and I can still get that type of constructive criticism afterwards, but advance myself in a way that's like not, because it weighs down on you. You know, right. when you want to perform at a high level, it's like that's all that life becomes about now. It's just high level performance. Did I score enough points? Did I make enough tackles? It becomes a point system and that's not a healthy way of living. So most definitely, like when you're coming from love, when you're doing things out of love, when you're receiving love, it changes the game completely.
Yeah, and your value is no longer attached to your performance, but you're valuable just because you're Marlon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to learn that.
Yeah, that resonates big time. Very similar journey to me. But yeah, I would love to actually just go back to where it all started. You know, San Antonio, I know small town actually just outside of San Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
But talk to us a little bit about growing up. You were a hooper when it all started, but your journey, you got a pretty special journey. So just talk a little bit about your upbringing and the nature of your basketball career to start.
Yeah. So my parents, like I said, had me very young. You know, I've been in sports all my life. We came up, you know, pretty well, you know. Didn't miss a beat considering kind of what the statistics say. My mom had me at 16.
Mm.
So, you know, if you look up kind of the statistics, you know, it usually has a trajectory. That wasn't our story. Been an athlete my whole life and was, you know, playing football and playing basketball every year and even collegiately. But just to sum it all up, you know, I didn't get to go to the school that I wanted to go to, and that was TCU. Mm-hmm. So,
why not?
Well, I had to take the SAT. So, I mean, everyone has to take the SAT, but like what I'm saying is like I needed to take the, you know, what the clearinghouses type deal. So I ended up taking the SAT and then paired that with my grades. I got in, but at that point, there was no more scholarships left. Mm. So I put all my eggs in a basket going to TCU. Like the coach came to my house and everything. And so, when it didn't work out, and granted, we didn't know the recruiting game. That's a very, very powerful. You know, what camps to go to, you know, when to send out letters, whatever else it is. Like, you can put yourself in a position to get any school you want if you got a little bit of talent.
Right.
Right. So we didn't know that. So that was, like, my first blow of failure. Mm-hmm. That's when I was like, ah. Like, so I ended up taking a full scholarship to play basketball at St. Mary's in San Antonio. I did not want to go there, but my mom said, hey, this is a full scholarship. You know, go here, get your education, make the most out of it. I ended up going.
Was that the first year of St. Mary's basketball team?
No. That's UTSA.
Okay, so we'll get there.
Yeah. So I was there, did really well, started a good portion of the season. And then just slowly but surely after I graduated from high school, this is right around the time my parents got divorced too, this started getting in trouble. Like, mm-hmm. Towards the end of that year, like I failed a drug test, just started just isolating. Didn't know why. I could take some guesses at it. Like, some might say it's because of the divorce. Some might say just whatever, hanging around with the wrong people. Mm-hmm. I like to think it is just because of my identity. I didn't really know who I was. I never really felt like I came from love.
Right.
I was always doing something for validation. So I think that's probably the main reason. But that was like the first time I had ever really been in like real trouble, mm-hmm. where it's like they got to call on your parents. They got to, you know, talk to you. There's talks about, you know, taking your scholarship away or whatever, because that school is pretty straight. It's a private school.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think it was D2 as well. So they can take away part of your scholarship. D1, they can't do that. Mm-hmm. So that's what they were doing with me for like a semester. And I ended up leaving. I ended up leaving from there. I had already knew UTSA was coming. I wanted to play football anyways, coming out of high school. And so I went over to UTSA. I was one of the first recruits there. I was going to start from scratch. That's exactly what I did. And ended up working out. Got a scholarship, I think, in the inaugural year. Mm-hmm. So 2010 was a year when they brought up all the red shirts. And then I came in 2009. So I graduated high school in 2008. I went over to UTSA 2009, that fall semester.
Okay.
And was there just going to school without,
You said football was what you wanted to do. So did you not have any football opportunities when it was time for you to graduate? And so that's why you went to St. Mary's? Or was
exactly.
It, okay. But that was still you wanted to make that happen at some point. Or had you kind of given up on the idea of playing football at that point?
I did really well at both sports. So, like, I was open. You know, in my mind, like, that's one thing I did know if I didn't know anything else. I can play at the next level. I can go pro, mm-hmm. whether it's in basketball or football. And so that was my mentality. But then, you know, when things started folding at St. Mary's, like I said, I did well there. It was kind of, I never really felt like I fit in. Mm-hmm. That's when I was like transitioning my mind to football.
I got you.
But they also have a basketball program at UTSA. So I was like, you know, I can walk along and play basketball. I was kind of fluid. But yeah, that's essentially what happened. I put all my eggs in the basket of going to TCU. That didn't work out, so I took the full ride to go play basketball. Left from there, started UTSA, did really well, and then the situation happened again.
the drug test situation.
The drug test situation. Yeah, happened again, and yeah, it's one of those things where you're trying to you're leaving from a situation to start scratch, but the problem still exists within you.
Right.
I was very arrogant. I was very isolated. At that time, like, I was an advocate for anything medicinal. I was just like, why are they even testing for this? Like, we're not bothering nobody. Like, I just kind of just made up all these different things in my head. Tried to, curtail the system,
mm-hmm.
you know. None of that worked. And by curtail, I mean just, like, you know, drinking a lot of water. If you know you're going to have a drug test. Like, doing all the different things that people do to try to pass a drug test.
Right.
Never worked out. I had several chances, had an opportunity to get drafted there. End up having to be released from the program. And that's when I really felt the humiliation.
From UTSA?
I got released from the program at UTSA.
Wow.
In my second year, that would have been my last year. I'm still second time all time in sacks there.
Mm-hmm.
Larry Coker was our coach there. There was a lot of different, there was writing was on the wall
right.
as far as what I can be at. There was not even a doubt in my mind, nor my coaches or evaluators. But I missed that last year. And that's when it was in the newspapers. It was in the news. It was everywhere. Social media. I was getting asked stuff in person. Like, that's when I really felt the weight of the world
mm-hmm.
coming down on me. It was embarrassing to my family, humiliated. And then, you know, what am I going to do now? What options do I have? So that was a transition there. But fast forward 2 years later, I ended up going to the CFL. I took 2 years off.
Yeah, so I want to talk about that. Yeah. Like, I mean, you go from, and I'm harping on this because it's significant in the whole story, but you go from basically starting a football program at UTSA and being like the inaugural class, setting records, to release from the program. Transitional time, like you said, and I know you're about to jump into what happened 2 years later, but like, in that period of time, that 2 year period, like, were you training? Where was your mindset at? And what headspace were you in as you were navigating this like immense amount of ambiguity?
Yeah, man, it was tough, man. Actually, I'd never been asked that before. Like, it was a blur. I was working odd jobs. I was finishing up that semester, that 2012, I think, semester. At UTSA, so I was going to school mm-hmm. still without being on the program, which added another layer of humiliation.
Right.
But that's what I was doing that semester, and I think going into 2013, I can't remember what jobs I had, but I had worked like selling, fundraising for like local businesses around high schools,
mm-hmm.
Got into like sales positions, worked as a collector. Like, I did a lot of different things, man. Just trying to, you know, figure it out. I've always been, I've always loved training.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I definitely did let my health go to the wayside, but I was probably partying.
Yeah.
That probably was part of it for sure. Just trying to figure things out. And so it wasn't until about a year and some change that I started looking at the CFL.
Okay.
Don't even know how I landed on that. Because again, if you were to tell me this like back then, I would have been like, CFL is beneath me.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, let me go back one more time to the TCU thing. The coaches had told me to go to JUCO, right, for one semester and then they can transfer me in.
No way.
I said no. I was like, no, I ain't gonna do that. Like, I'm above JUCO.
Right.
I'm above doing that. So, anyways, kind of lost myself for a second. What about
you? Were saying that the CFL had came into your awareness at this point in time, whereas prior you were like, no way would I ever think of the CFL.
Yeah, exactly. That was the same thing with the CFL. But started looking into it, I was like, this could be a hell of an opportunity. Started doing more research and then got an opportunity. The funny thing about kind of my life is God has just redeemed and redeemed like several times. It is from the St. Mary's situation to the UTSA situation and then to the Ottawa Redblacks. What's unique about all of those things is that those are all new programs. My high school, I didn't even talk about high school, but the high school I went to was a new school that I started. Came from a traditional powerhouse football team, Judson High School, mm-hmm. And went there, and then I went to UTSA to start that. And then the CFL team I went to was a new thing. So I'm not sure what God is telling me with all that, because like I'm just have a knack for starting new things, right? Yeah. Or being a part of that. But you know, in each time there's like a 2-year difference. But yeah, just to fast forward, just kind of how everything started. Starting from high school, went to, ended up going to the St. Mary's UTSA, then the CFL team, the Ottawa Red Blacks. Did really well there, and that's when I also started facing other adversity, which is, you know, being in pro sports. Like, that was a whole another layer. I played differently, got released a couple times, and then ended up moving back down to San Antonio.
What do you think were the biggest challenges of playing in professional sports?
The layer of feeling like you're going to get cut. Mm. So you don't want to screw things up. And that's like a one-way ticket back home, you know, to not run a play right. You've been taught it. So dealing with that, also at the time I was in a relationship. So that added probably a layer of anxiety. Because it's like you go back home, you know, she's Canadian.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a challenge there. And I think that's pretty much it. At the end of the day, it was football. But, like, that adds so much more in it. So, you know, I think I didn't play as fast as I could play because mm-hmm. I was worried about making mistakes.
Yeah.
But I played well enough. And just dealing with the game of – because it's not fair. Because you can have a guy that had – there was a guy, for instance, when I was – after my first 2 years there, I was planning on going in the NFL. There was a guy that had the same stats as me, maybe a little bit smaller, and got an opportunity to play with the Jets. And there was nothing coming for me. Mm-hmm. So dealing with that, trying to understand that, and having to press on. So, I mean, those are probably the most challenging things. But getting cut would be the fourth one. Right. Sorry, getting cut.
Yeah. What do you make of that analogy of, like, you know, in football specifically, I remember being coached all the time, like, to not be thinking about it and just to, like, go full speed. And this is the first time I've ever thought about how that applies to life outside of sports. And I think there's actually a lot of value in that specific guidance outside of sports. Because I think a lot of people will be in this analysis paralysis mode where they're mm-hmm. thinking and planning and have all these ideas of things they want to create and do. Like, take the business, for example, All In Fit. Like, you could think about how you wanted it to look and think about what you would do if you were doing it full time. But if you never, like, actually go full speed ahead, it's not going to grow into what it is today. So what do you make of that advice, like, you know, play full speed ahead?
Yeah, you know, it's better to be, I think Steve Jobs said it, like, you know, we're going to make a ton of mistakes, but at least we're making decisions, you know, and you could speed up that the production or the lessons learned. I think that everyone that knows me would say I'm a thinker, I'm a deep thinker. The coaches, you know, I would be told all the time, even from friends, like, you're thinking too much, stop overthinking. Mm-hmm. And that started to be something, too, that really bothered me. But that's another story. But you know, you definitely have to, you know, you get your reps in practice, right? Mm-hmm. You don't bite off more than you can chew. I think Damon John said that you know, most small businesses fail. Because, like, when they make a mistake or whatever, it's exacerbated by the amount of money they took on, the amount of debt. Mm-hmm. When, you know, there's people that started their business for $40. Mm-hmm. You know, they're like, I want to start a business. Okay, you can start it. And I add on all those different, like, layers and make mistakes, but it won't hurt you that much. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely think that you need to prepare, you need to practice, you need to think about what you're doing, but then you also need to be decisive. And, you know, I was like that in football. Like, it was different when I played in college. In college, like, when I played football, I practiced my butt off. Like, I practiced all that. So in the game, full speed. I also wasn't dealing with worried about getting cut either, you know. So professional, like, football, it's a shift. Like, from college to playing professional, your mindset has to be tough. But, you know, when I got in the game, it was just second nature. I'm flying, doing my thing. In the CFL, it was different.
Mm-hmm.
It was different because even though I was prepared, you second guess yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, okay, let me make sure. And you're thinking more because you're worried about getting cut or not doing the right play. And all it does is backfire on you.
Yeah. How do you think the high performance mindset that we've talked about a decent bit, like, do you think that was heavily involved in that fear of, there's a level of fear around, oh, I could get cut. But do you think it also played in from the standpoint of, like, my value is attached to the fact that I'm a CFL football player, and if I don't make these plays, if I don't run the right blitz or stunt, like, my value, I have no value. Do you think that was involved?
Yeah. I think I was actually thinking about this the other day, just because I reminisce on my experience, you know, playing ball. But there's some people that get to a certain level and they're just trying to make it at that level. I just want to make it. I want to have a successful business. I want to, you know, make the 53-man roster, right? And then there's some people that go into a situation and saying, I want to be the best, or I not only want to make it at this level, I want to be a guy that they talk about, you know. It's a very different mindset, and it's a very different disposition, you know, in the whole thing. And so, you know, I definitely think that you can still. I mean, if you made it to that level, you're a high performer.
For sure.
You know. But to be, to differentiate yourself, you got to be that person that, you know, isn't worried about you. You know it's a possibility,
right?
You know, like it's like, why put your attention on it? Why put your energy into thinking about it? You already know it's a possibility. People get cut. It happens,
right?
But if you kind of went into it just like, hey, you know, I'm not thinking about getting cut because I'm focusing on doing my job the best that I can do it.
Mm.
Not just doing it right. Doing it like Nick Saban said, doing it till you can't get it wrong.
Yeah.
Like getting into that place, I think is what I had challenges with. And that's be the one thing that I, if I could change, if God, you know, came in here with his magic wand and could take me back, that would be the one thing that I would change.
Man, I think it's interesting to hear you say that, because what came to mind for me was like, just be in the present moment. And that's like, again, across sports, but also life in general. It's like we can spend so much time thinking about, oh, I might get cut, or this might happen, or this could or should, whatever happened. But like, what good does that do you in the present moment where your feet are with what the project that's sitting right in front of you? Like, there's really no value in it. Yeah. So that's very super true. Powerful, yeah.
Yeah, there's no value in it. And I have to, I mean, just for what we're doing right now in All Unfit, you know, no one else is doing across the state, hardly any company in the nation. You know, we have a team now. There's just, you know, there's pressure. But you can either give in to the pressure, which means you're giving it more attention than what it needs, or you can focus on kind of doing what's required. You know, getting up in the morning, like, you know, and so that's what I've been floating with that a little bit, because it can become a lot. And, you know, the game of business is similar to the game of sports. It really is. And that's what we build our brand and our concept off of. So it's something that I'm still learning, and something that we try to give our clients the blueprint to understand.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's get into that. So you went CFL, a few years in the CFL. Had another first with the Arena Football
League? The Alliance of American Football League.
So had another first there.
Yeah.
You know, that went for a year?
So it was, yeah, the league was only 1 year. I didn't even last that long. Okay. So I'll get into that. Yeah.
So, but then, you know, when that ended, it was time to, you know, create this new Marlin, Death's identity was no longer the football player, but like, it's time to do something else. And I know, mm-hmm. you know, for me, when I think about my transition, it was like, I got to get a job. I got to go do something in corporate America. For you, when football ended, what was your mindset around what was next?
Yeah, when I got to that point, I went into the high performance mindset again. Now, mm-hmm. It backfired a little bit. So let me back up a little bit. The Commanders was the team, San Antonio Commanders. Mm-hmm. This is another redemption. I'm thinking, God, yes, thank you. I get to play the game again, see if it didn't work out. But guess what? Like, I got signed to this team. I was one of the first contracts there, mm-hmm. From there. Was in good shape, everything. I was like, man, this is promising. We got Daryl Johnson, you know, Moose as our GM. We got all this other NFL talent. Here it is. Well, my back started to the most random thing I was doing when I was training, I was touching on the goalposts. Mm-hmm. And then pulled up my back, I was like, come on, man. and so I'll fast forward. I ended up getting cut. Just because it was the same issue I had in college, and they didn't want to give me a steroid injection for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. So I got cut, and this is like literally before camp was starting. I had brought so much food, all these different things. At this point, like, I started my company. Started my company, I think it was 2018. This is like a partnership I had. Mm-hmm. So I had like an ambassador deal with this company called Zedrix. Like, you know, I was ready going into camp. It was a meal plan company. And then got cut and had to take all that stuff out. It was humiliating. Because I had to take all that stuff. Like, well, I see the guys going into practice to watch film or whatever. Like, I'm carrying that little, the hotel, whatever that thing is called. What is the bell? The thing you carry your luggage on.
The bellhop thing.
Yeah, I had a fridge on there. I had so much stuff. I'm like, man, it took everything in my power not to cry. Because mm-hmm. I was just like, I didn't understand why these things are happening to me. But, you know, after that happened, you know, I wanted to have my own business. You know, I ended up going out on my own. I separated from that partnership in February. So February 2019 is when I started All In Fit. But I was all in, mm-hmm. right? And not much was coming in.
Right.
So the high performance mindset bit me in the butt because I was, you know, a bit arrogant, a bit stubborn to go and have something that was producing some type of cash flow while I was building that. Mm-hmm. I was convinced that, like, I would die. Like, you know, I would die trying doing this thing. I'm going to be all in on this.
Right.
Thank God for my awesome wife. She said it in the most sweetest way, because no one could really get through to me at that time. And she said that, you know, it's not quitting to go and put yourself in a position. This is, at this time, she was living in Austin. Mm-hmm. I was still in San Antonio. So I ended up moving to Austin. I got a job at Lifetime. Still had All In Fit as my plan. I never wanted to leave from that. And then the rest was history. Yeah, started a brand, and we could talk about that.
Yeah, so was All In Fit at that point in time when you were getting done with the Alliance Football League, was it high performance coaching, training? Like, what exactly did it look like then, and then has it evolved since?
Yeah, so it started really even before February. Like, before the February mark, when I was still, like, in this partnership, it was training athletes. Mm-hmm. So it was a company. Like, so I had my experience in Canada. We also had connections in Mexico, mm-hmm. and they did international football camps. So we had one guy that would handle film. You know, I would handle, like, the training and some of the operations. And then the other guy would handle the recruiting and setting up the camps and stuff like that for these countries. Mm-hmm. So I was still, like, involved with training athletes, like younger athletes, high school, middle school. So that's kind of where it started. And then, you know, when I moved to Austin, I still had some athletes I was training for football in San Antonio. But then everything just kind of morphed into training, you know, gym pop. So training them like athletes, mm-hmm. and, you know, trying to figure out kind of what their needs were. And so now our demographics are anywhere from the age of 35 to 55 years old, family, kids, motivated, some own businesses, some people are in sales. So we're working with, you know, business athletes, people that want and desire to get better, and we're giving them the blueprint of you know, how athletes train.
What do you think caused the transition from more of a true athlete focus on, like, you know, student athletes, whether it be high school, middle school, collegiate, or beyond, to that gym pop, you know, salesperson that's wanting to crush their quota, also have a, you know, healthy body and strong mind, to the executive, to who are, like, those gym pop people who are motivated? Like, what do you think caused that transition?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the keyword, transition. I would say more, it was a parallel. So I started, the more I started talking to, you know, some of the people we work with to this day, I started just listening to them, their challenges, their long work hours, the stress, the demands on the daily, you know, on their mental as well as physical, and having to, you know, to eat what you hunt, you know, that's how it's like being an athlete. You gotta put in the work. Especially at the collegiate or professional level, the percentages go way down for people that actually make it to that level.
For sure.
The percentages are way down with people that are actually successful in business, you know, and don't go out of business in, you know, the first 3 years. So I started to say, oh, man, this is a parallel. And just like what I've learned as a professional athlete was transferable to the business athlete and their struggles. So that's kind of what it kind of clicked for me a little bit, that, you know, one, candidly, I wanted to create something that I could speak to, that I understand, that gives me that sense of team camaraderie, that, you know, we're talking about replicating, duplicating the experience as a collegiate athlete or professional athlete. I wanted that. And with that, I found there was other people that, that really valued that. So there was a parallel between that and then just the you know, the fit business-wise was just a convenience of what we do, which I'll speak to in a second.
Yeah, and so when it began, did you have a brick-and-mortar space? Were you meeting people at their home gym, at their house, or, like, were you training them at Lifetime? You know, obviously this is a strength conditioning training platform, so to speak. Where do you actually do the training?
So, yeah, we've never had a brick and mortar. It's been 100% mobile since inception. We do house calls, so doing one-on-ones or, like, semi-private group of, like, four. And then we had an online – we have an online service as well. And then eventually, before we got our latest concept, we would get community outreach programs in neighborhoods like, you know, Liberty Hill and Cedar Park. And then we would do kind of larger group stuff outside of their amenity gym or in an area, you know, kind of designated for fitness. So, yeah, that's how it started.
And how have you, I mean, one thing that I've found in my own business and entrepreneurial journey is, like, you just kind of figure stuff out as you go. Like, yeah, you have ideas and you want to bring stuff to life, but oftentimes as you're going down a path, it looks a little bit different than you maybe anticipated. So what has it been like to grow your business, scale your business, and how do you continue to do that? I feel like the last couple of times I've seen you, there's been this level of, like, man, you know, there's new things happening and exciting things, and it's like, yeah, I'm just curious how different has the journey looked than what you maybe anticipated, and what are some of the exciting things that you're working on?
Yeah, it's definitely tougher than what I thought it was going to be, for starters. It, you know, you have to have patience. And, you know, it's definitely changed me as a man. You know, entrepreneurship, I think, is, like, the greatest teacher of character. Yeah, definitely. I'm trying to think how I can answer this. Could you ask me the question again?
Yeah, I just asked, like, how different has it looked than what you maybe anticipated? And essentially, like, how have you grown and scaled the business? Because, you know, I think of a personal training business or a performance training business, and it's like, you know, we do house calls, but I know that you're doing a lot of awesome stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious to learn more about the journey and how you've evolved and changed as you've been in business.
Yeah, operations has been something I've learned a lot, just kind of focusing on that. Also, because I, you know, my appetite is too big for my stomach. So, you know, definitely getting focused on one or two different projects, you know, that can advance the company as opposed to like 10 different things. Mm-hmm. When we make a decision, it's like, okay, we got to understand there's going to be 10, 15, 20 things attached to this mm-hmm. on the back end. Do we have the resources, tools to be able to fulfill that? So I'm thinking about things a little bit more methodically now at this point in my journey. You know, as far as different projects go, I mean, we decided to be 100% mobile from the jump. Mm-hmm. Cause we saw that there was just an opportunity. There wasn't, you know, hardly any companies out there doing it at a high level. Mm-hmm. And so we got together and said, hey, well, you know, what can we do with this? And that's when the All In Fit truck was born. Mm-hmm. And so that's our large group concept. And, you know, we always want to see how can we expand and grow the house call fitness industry. Mm-hmm. What could we do? So that's one thing. And just figuring out how we can make things more convenient, help people save more time, help provide more accountability. The ultimate goal is that we want people to not miss a beat with what you would get at like a big box gym. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's kind of, you know, how the All In Fit truck was born, was how do we make a product that is, that they won't compromise, mm-hmm. that they won't feel like they're compromising. And like, you know, the house call, I mean, people can get a good workout with just a kettlebell or a dumbbell. Mm-hmm. But outside of like that type of equipment, you're really kind of limited.
Right.
To what you can do, especially when you start doing, you know, small group or anything bigger than that. So, you know, that's pretty much where it was born, and, you know, figuring out how to expand from there. So we're running the same play, just with different players and, you know, and going a little bit further with the plays that we're running. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's the beauty about kind of what we're doing. We got some other ideas we're working on, you know, bringing recovery, you know, conveniently to people, but we're a full-scale, you know, comprehensive wellness package.
Yeah.
You know, everything you need, you can get with us at your convenience.
So what does that look like? Like, let's say Torchy's Tacos, founder and CEO, calls Marlon and says, hey, I want to get a session in. Are you pulling up, working out for 30 minutes, leaving? Or what is there a typical session mm-hmm. and what that looks like? Or is it kind of dependent on the client?
Yeah, so we have small groups. So for the truck itself, we're about to roll out a small group option. We call it like small group exec. Mm-hmm. So if you have a team of go-getters, these are your killers, you know, the CEO and like your top director of sales or whatever, and other C-suite executives, you guys will get together and we'll go there for an hourly rate.
Okay.
And work with you. It's not really meant to service people one-on-one just because of how big the truck is.
Yeah.
You know, gas and things like that. The truck is meant to have like, you know, be more community. Mm-hmm. We have packages that would be like reoccurring. If we talk to the Torchy's founder,
yeah,
and he's like, yeah, you know, I think our team would love this, you know, what would it be for you to come out? We just fit them in a schedule, and now they're reoccurring. We also do special event pop-ups, so if you don't think this is something they would do regularly, mm-hmm. but you want to bring your team out to do something and, like, bond with your team, then we can come out for 3 or 4 hours, get the people together for a workout, things like that.
Very cool, man. Yeah. It's cool to hear the just the entrepreneurial spirit and how it kind of guides you and you figure out what makes sense.
Yeah.
What, kind of back to you, like, how do you pour a lot of effort and energy into your clients and the people around you. How do you make sure that you're also having time to like pour into yourself? Do you have daily routines and things that you do to make sure that like Marlon's taken care of?
Yeah, my wife and I try to have family day every Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
So like tomorrow they have like half off movies at like Alamo. So sometimes we'll switch the day. So tomorrow I think we're going to go to the movies. But just little things. The truth of the matter is like I really love what I do. So I love working, you know, at this point it's pretty much every day.
Mm-hmm.
And just finding like the love in it and not just doing it to just for validation.
Mm-hmm.
But doing it because I want to, you know, at this point we have a team, you know, that we're growing. You know, and like I'm looking at what I do as like a service to them and their family.
Mm.
And so, you know, I don't take that lightly. So I pretty much right now, like I'm more aware of it. So I'm more aware when I'm not giving myself like the time that I need
mm-hmm.
to recover. But the truth is right now, I love what I do. You know, going to the gym. It's something that has always been a part of who I am,
mm-hmm.
but like, I'm not doing it so that I could have, you know, more girth with me when I'm taking on a tackle.
Right.
You know, now it's like I'm doing it because I just, man, you know what? Sometimes I go to the gym, I don't even have an agenda.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I'm getting here. I just want to move.
Right.
Be around, smile, bust a sweat, and get out.
Right.
Right. So I do that. I'm a huge. Huge stand-up comedy guy.
Okay.
Yeah, so you know, I love to laugh. So just little things, man. Just love laughing, love going to the movies, love spending time with my wife, you know, seeing my friends and watching football,
mm-hmm.
you know, obviously. But just little things. Like, I'm not a huge meditator,
mm-hmm.
although, like, I do need to give myself that time, probably in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Because it won't be any other time throughout the day, yeah. just with everything going on. But, that's kind of where I'm at with that.
Who's your NFL team? You got one?
Packers.
How are they doing this year?
4-6. Four and six. We just beat the Chargers yesterday. And we got the Lions this week, who's crushing it this year. So if we win that, hey, we might be able to squeeze in the playoffs. But, no, you know, we didn't really have that high expectations for this year.
Right. How did you become a Packers fan?
I was, man, I get that question a lot. Like, I think I was like 7, 8 years old. And I just remember seeing the Packers. I think that's one of the years they won a Super Bowl.
Okay.
I liked the coach. The coach just looked raw. And like, he was like spitting on the sideline. I was like, man, I want to play for that guy. And this is like right around the time I'm like 8, 9.
Yeah.
So I think like when I first started like strapping on pads was like 10, 11.
Okay.
So this kind of became my team. And what's ironic is my dad's side of the family is all from like Illinois, Detroit. So my dad is a huge Bears fan.
Okay.
So it especially didn't make any sense. But yeah, since the age of 7, been a Packers fan.
That's random.
Never switched up.
Are you a Spurs guy?
I do like the Spurs. Yeah. Spurs and the Warriors, I suppose. Like I've liked Curry growing up. I'm from San Antonio, so that's the team that I root for. They've been trash for the past 3-4 years, however long it's been. But now that they got Wembanyama.
Yeah, he's nice.
They're fun to watch. They're still losing a lot of games, though. But, now I'm more engaged.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the team that I root for, but I got a little less engaged over the last few years.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, I always ask my guests, you know, if you had a piece of advice to leave the audience with, whether it be sports, entrepreneurial, whatever you want, what would it be?
Give yourself the time you need to figure out you. Once you figure out you, then everything else is possible. And it's an ongoing journey of figuring out you. Who are you? What's your purpose? Why do you do the things that you do? And when you find those answers within yourself, then you find a path. And when you find a path, you find purpose. You find purpose, you find meaning and fulfillment. So I think that's the main thing, just because of how I've seen myself make so many mistakes and go down a path that I would not have chosen just from not knowing that, not taking that time. So that'd be the main thing, you know, to know yourself is to put yourself in a position to do whatever you want.
Yeah. I love it. Well, man, I appreciate you joining me today. This was awesome.
Yeah. I appreciate you, man. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. And to the audience, thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of the Walk-On Mentality Podcast. And we'll see you on the next one.